My guest at this time is Craig Shirley. He's the head of Shirley & Bannister Public Affairs, a major public relations firm in the Washington area. He's also the author of a number of very interesting and very successful books on politics and history. The most recent one, very importantly, has just been released. It's entitled December 1941, 31 Days That Changed America and Saved the World. And with today being the 70th anniversary of the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, today seemed like a very important time to take a look at what happened during that pivotal month 70 years ago. And Craig, thanks so much for being with us.
You bet. Thank you, Greg.
The fulcrum of the month being December 7th. Describe what a December 6th America looked like. I know we were doing our best to stay out of the war, which had already begun a while ago in Asia and at least a couple of years earlier in Europe. The economy still struggling, but for the most part, what was a typical American day like?
We were at there was an uneasy peace. The Americans, if they were giving any thought to war, it was in Europe. Pacific was one of the farthest things from their mind. Nobody was thinking about a war with Japan. On that Saturday, Americans, if they're listening to the radio during the day, it'd be listening to Fibber McGee and Molly or Bob Hope or Shirley Temple or local news and farm reports or local children's programming, singing, variety shows, things like that. And if they went out to the movies that night, and they probably did, it would be to see Citizen Kane or The Maltese Falcon or Dumbo or any number of movies, including one named International Squadron, starring an up-and-coming actor by the name of Ronald Reagan. But the America First movement had tremendous influence over Congress and over the national debate. There was no interest in this country in getting involved in another land war in Europe. World War I had left a very bad taste in the American people's mouths. There was a saying going around the country after World War I that all we got was death and debt and George M. Cohen. So Americans were very resolute in not getting involved in any world war.
We're talking with Craig Shirley. The book is December 1941. And Craig, in today's media environment, of course, something like Pearl Harbor would be known by the entire country and the entire world in a matter of minutes. Obviously, communications not quite up to that speed then. How long did it really take for Americans that Sunday to grasp what had happened?
Well, Greg, they knew about the attack fairly quickly, but they didn't know the details of the attack, and most Americans couldn't find Pearl Harbor on a map to save their life. All they knew was that the Japanese had attacked and hadn't declared war first, and also it happened on a Sunday, and I think that deeply offended America. In many ways, it was a mostly Christian country, and it probably considered itself a Christian country in December 1941, and the fact that the Japanese attacked on a Sunday probably deeply offended the American citizenry. But as far as the information, right after the attack, a news blackout was clamped on Hawaii, so there was little information getting out. What was getting out was information that was going to the White House, and then the White House was making the announcements to the gathered press there.
And, of course, it was the next day that President Roosevelt spoke to the joint session of Congress, asked for a declaration of war, issued the famous line about a date which will live in infamy. So it would seem, certainly looking back at that, that the nation, like a light switch, flipped from being America first and we'll take care of our own business, let's get this economy going, to over there again. Is that pretty much accurate?
That is the perfect way to describe it. It was like a light switch being flicked, because the America First movement melts away. Isolationism melts away. Everybody is committed to the war effort, although, interestingly enough, everybody's committed to the war effort against Japan, because it's not until December 11th, 4 days later, that Germany and Italy declare war on the United States, and so our Congress and Roosevelt respond in kind. And we're more kind of, okay, well, I guess we've got to get into this type of attitude when it came to Germany and Italy, whereas everybody was gung-ho to get revenge, to seek revenge against Japan.
What were the most important and significant ways that the government reacted, whether it's building up the military, building up the arsenal of democracy for the materiel needed for the war? What were
everything,
some of the
things? Across the board, the Office of Production Management tells Detroit shortly after December 7th, you're not going to make any more automobiles. You're done making automobiles. You're going to start making airplanes. And in less than a month, the Ford Motor Company and Goodyear and Fisher Auto Body Parts begin manufacturing B-24 and B-25 bombers that are made out of fabricated automobile parts, which you think about is quite astonishing. These are big, complicated airplanes. They're both four-engine jobs, big, heavy, weighing many tons. And that was a way across the culture. Food growth and food supply, and as far as distribution, as far as manufacturing, everything was turned on a dime within hours and days to focus on one thing, and that was to win the war.
As the government obviously went after these resources and tried to marshal them as best as possible, of course, you mentioned the rationing. Eventually, it was gas and butter and sugar and all sorts of other things. For the most part, was there an all-in attitude on that as well, or did that kind of get some people riled up that, you know, that's going a little too far?
I found no evidence that anybody was really upset about anything that the government asked or required them to do. The government took over all the commercial radio stations in America and issued very strict guidelines on what they could broadcast and what they couldn't broadcast, anything that would undermine American morale or anything that would be information to help the enemy. Roosevelt was quite clear in a radio address to the American people the night of December 9th that the American media had a responsibility to report the truth accurately and faithfully and not to report rumors and third-hand information. The Federal Communication Commission issued very strict guidelines to radio stations, and one of them was that you couldn't use a commercial venture to broadcast war news. So you couldn't say, you know, at 12 o'clock we'll have news on the Pacific Front brought to you by Campbell Soup. You couldn't do that. But nobody really seemed to mind. There was an ACLU, but nobody seemed to issue any complaints about how easily the country swung from freedom to security in order to support America.
We're talking with Craig Shirley. The book is December 1941, 31 Days That Changed America and Saved the World. And Craig, obviously it's been 70 years. You and I weren't alive then. Most Americans weren't alive at that time. And so trying to recreate in even a wonderfully written book like yours might still leave a little bit of a gap in folks younger than can remember that, can
sure
appreciate that. The closest parallel we've had since then potentially is 9/11. Is that an accurate way of how the nation reacted, came together, healing words from the president in the immediate aftermath? How would you compare or contrast?
Well, I would compare both of them as being horrific events that were visited upon the Americans unlike anything before or since. But the reaction to one was quite different than the reaction to the other. You know, we knew the Japanese attacked us. We knew they had home islands. We knew they had a navy. We knew they had an air force and an army. There was a very clearly identified enemy, whereas radical Islam is a little bit more amorphous. And we've also, in the last 70 years, introduced moral ambiguities into debates about national policy and national will, where there were no moral ambiguities after December 7th. We believed that we were a force for good, that Winston Churchill and the British were a force for good, that Chiang Kai-shek was a force for good, and that Nazi Germany and fascist Italy and the Empire of Japan were forces for evil. It was a clear, in the minds of Americans, and I think that all the evidence bears it out, it was a titanic struggle between the forces of good and evil.
Last question before we let you go, Craig. Obviously, as your book describes and as historians have noted for a while, we were caught flat-footed on December 7th, 1941. Our Pacific Fleet took a huge toll. Yet less than a year later, after suffering some other losses, including the Philippines most notably, whether you look at the Coral Sea and certainly the Battle of Midway, it didn't take us very long to turn the tide in the other direction, although it would take another 3-plus years to finish the job.
Right.
But what does that say, and what does that tell us about the way America responded to that horrific day?
Well, I think it's probably one of the finest. It is the finest example of American exceptionalism. That, and I think the Revolutionary War and George Washington's leadership. I think those probably stand out as the two greatest examples of American exceptionalism and the can-do spirit that is unique to the American race. Is that there was the war brought out. I'm not going to gloss it over and say it was all Andy Hardy at the time. There was bad things going on. Harry Truman was heading an investigating committee into corruption and defense spending. You know, crime went on, and all those other things went on. But the story is more about the goodness of the American people and the steadfastness of the American people and the sacrifice, not only for themselves, but for the people of the world in order to defeat the Axis powers.
Well, Craig, it's a fascinating book and so important for all of us to remember that day in American history and what it all triggered. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Greg, thank you so much, and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you. Craig
Thanks.
Shirley is the head of Shirley and Bannister Public Affairs, a very successful public relations firm in the Washington area, and he's the author once again, of December 1941, 31 Days That Changed America and Saved the World. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.